Hello, it's Peter Wright and Kathleen Bove with another episode of The Yakking Show. And this is the Harmony, Your Path to Wholeness channel, where we bring you interesting guests to help you move along that path to wholeness in the interesting times we're living in. But first, let's introduce co-host Kathleen. Hi, Kathleen. Good to be back on the show again. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Peter. Thank you. And thank you all so very much for tuning into our show. We so appreciate having you. And as Peter mentioned, we do have another special guest with us today. We are very privileged to have Kimberly Beam to the show. Hello, Kimberly. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Right. Now, Kimberly is the founder of Social Work Your Life. This is helping individuals practically and consciously create their dream future using a bespoke blend of psychology, meditation, and gumption. So let's just jump right in. Kim, if someone is hungry for more and bigger, but doesn't know how to open those doors, what advice would you have for them?
That's such a wow. It's not, you just handed me an elephant. Okay, I will eat it one bite at a time. I'm actually in a space now where I am also in this in for myself. Like, how do I create what I love, right? How do I create what I love, and how do I do what lights me up? I'm finding myself in a moment now where I'm pivoting to my intuition. And so I'm gonna say, how do you find what you love? And that is tapping into your gut and tapping into your core. And tapping into who you are and finding your, like, the thing that makes you excited, right? Excited. It's edgy between excited and scared, right? Mm-hmm. There's that phrase that goes out there that's nerve-sighted, right? It makes me nerve-sighted, where you're nervous about it, but you're excited about it. And so if you're, I think Joe Dispenza talks about it, where our subconscious likes it when we're asleep, right? Our bodies like it when we're asleep. And so we do a lot of things sleepwalking. We're awake, we're doing it, but we do it so often and it's such the routine that our body just sort of like follows that routine really, really simply. And we get into like this habit of, what does your morning look like? For a lot of us, our mornings look exactly the same, right? We sort of bumble through the day. Yeah. And then we get into work and work looks pretty much the same and it becomes this routine and then you just sort of settle into it. I mean, when you change a job, then you get like, oh no, what am I doing? Because all of that routine goes away. But then within a couple of months, you're back into that, like, I'm sleepwalking through my day. And you know you're sleepwalking through your day when you're like taking your route to work and you don't remember all of it. Or I have been the person who will like miss my exit because I'm so into the book I'm reading that I'll have like blown right past the spot where I'm supposed to get off the highway and be like, I don't know where I am right now. And then you're like, oh, and then you have that wake up moment of, oh, my daydream is now over and I'm like, I am awake. And then once you get back onto the path again, you kind of like go back to sleep because you're like, oh, this is just what we do. And I really think coming into a space where you are realizing this idea is so exciting to you that it wakes you up and wakes you out of your routine
mm-hmm.
and makes you go, I am really excited to try that. And I am really scared to try that. And there's a balance between the edge of too much. Like, I mean, for me, I know skydiving would just be too much. That's just too much.
Me too.
Just too much. But and some roller coasters are just too much. But there's other roller coasters that are like, no, I can handle this one. This one's edgy but exciting. And that one is just too much. And so it's a space of not where you're throwing yourself into a space where you're like in your panic mode, but where you're in the, this is new and adventurous, and the idea of this lights me up.
Great.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I just got to clarify something for the audience so they don't think you're irresponsible. When you said you're so into the book you're reading, you miss the exit. you're not actually reading while you're driving, I hope.
No, I'm just listening to it.
Sorry.
I mean, my eyes are focused on the road. I mean, right. I have myself, but like, I'm one of those people that listen to audiobooks all the time. And I don't just listen to them at like, you know, one speed. People are like, I listen to it one for one, right? No, I listen to it at like 0.7 now. Sometimes 2.0 double speed. If the reader is a really slow reader naturally, I'll be like, ugh, and then I'll just speed them up to 2.0. So it's double speed. But most of the time when I listen to the book, I'm listening to it between like 1.7 speed and 1.8 speed.
Okay. No, I was being a bit cheeky. I have a dark sense of humor, but I just had visions of you with a book propped up on the steering wheel saying,
Oh.
"Oh, there's my exit."
I years ago had the idea that we needed to all have a monorail instead of a car, and you could have like singleton pods and like family pods, and then like you could get in your pod and it would connect your driveway. Your driveway would connect to it. It's like a monorail system, and then you would get on the highway and go even faster. And then you could just sit in there and read books while you were
Read
like
books. Oh,
brought to
brilliant.
work by yourself. You program in where you want to go. This is like at the very beginning of GPSs. I had this idea. You program in where you want to go, and it would like take you right to where you wanted to be. I'm like,
Well,
you would
now
no longer
there's
need roads.
brilliant.
Self-driving cars are the way to the future, I think. So we're
Yeah, but it's just
all
me
for them.
before even like I was like I took the monorail system from Disneyland and gave us all individual track like cars that got onto the track.
Well done. I don't worry. I don't commute much anymore, but I also, when I did commute, I used to listen to CDs or download stuff to listen in the car. So I've done that too. But I'm going to get back to what you're saying about the sort of border or the razor edge between absolute panic and excitement. Now, I used to run ultramarathons when a few years ago when I was a little bit or a lot younger. Let me be fair. And ultramarathon was 50 miles, 85 kilometers. So at the start, the one I ran, I think we had between 12 and 16,000 people. It was like a New York or the Boston, but longer, 50 miles. So at the start, you're hemmed in with all these people, and you can feel the nervous energy, and you're absolutely scared because you know in 8 hours or 9 hours, you're going to be going through more pain than you've ever been through in your life, right? And that's going to last for another 2 days while you recover. But you're so caught up with the excitement of it that it's that razor edge. 1 minute you're panicking and then you're excited. A little bit like public speaking as well. So anyway, I was going just picking up on what you were saying. I know what you're talking about, and I hope our audience get those experiences because they might be scary, but they're good. What's the biggest factor, Jim, in your experience? What's the biggest factor holding people back from realizing their true potential? Is there one thing, or is it more complicated?
Resistance.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter where that resistance comes from. It can come from
Sure.
within, it can come from family, it can come from programming, it can come from generational, like the generational passing down, right? I like to joke, not joke, that families get into professions, right? Just like my family is rife with PhDs, right? Like we have PhDs. It's just something we have. Like I don't have one, but I'm like not technically on the road to one, but like I have a master's plus I have the 60, which is technically what you need before you do the dissertation. Like I didn't quite do the P I wasn't a PhD. The 60 was another master's degree, but like I have what my sister has two master's degrees. My dad has a PhD, my grandfather a PhD, my aunt a PhD. PhDs are not scary to me. Like the idea of going a PhD, it's actually kind of like, and it's just a lot of work. Is it worth it? Right? Like, meh, I don't know if I really, meh. Like I'm, but I don't have a resistance to to going to get a PhD. If somebody was like, hey, we want to hire you for this job. In fact, I had somebody offer me a job and I was really considering, yeah, I'll take it and I'll go get the PhD because that's what I need for the job. I knew it was a lot of work. I just didn't want to get a PhD in English literature. Like I was like, if I'm going to get a PhD, it's not going to be in that. It's going to be in, I don't know what, but not that. But one could say I had resistance to that, right? Resistance is so like let's say your whole family is PhDs, right? And I decide to go into cosmetology, right? And I want to be not just a cosmetologist, but I want to be a cosmetologist at a movie studio, right? I might feel a lot of resistance from two levels on that. One, I might feel a lot of resistance of who gets to be a cosmetologist in a movie studio. Like who gets to really get that job? Like how what hoops do you have to jump through and your own brain trying to stop you to be like, that's too big. Like that dream is too big. How do you get a dream like that? So that's my own internal resistance of that's just a too big a dream. And then on the other side, it could be my family telling me, what, you want to work in a salon down the street? Like, that's not what we do. That's not what we're about. We're not, that's not the kind of family we are. And so then you have family resistance that you have to overcome as well. So there's like pressures that come at you. And then there's the own, like that feeling in your throat and your gut that just says, this is too much. This is too much. Like whatever this in, to whatever that is. And then we will, our subconscious will say, that is scary to us. And the biggest job of your subconscious is to keep you alive. That's the only job of your subconscious is to keep you alive. Your subconscious is to keep you alive. And
Can I
so,
just, Kathleen, can I ask another one before Kim goes back to you? What about inertia? 'Cause my experience has been that I've taken a lot of chances in my life. Some have been good, some have been pretty disastrous, but I've survived. I get the feeling a lot of people are uncomfortable with their position in life, but not uncomfortable enough to do anything about it. So inertia comes in, and it's the on the treadmill, whatever you want to call it, or in the tunnel, and that's just where they're going to stay, because to get out of that rut, not a tunnel, a rut, is more uncomfortable than staying in it. Is that a big factor?
Yes. Yeah, I mean inertia is it, but that's also, one can also say that's resistance,
Sure,
right? Life
sure.
is comfortable where I am. Like, why do I have to change it? Like, I might have a couple of dreams that are over here that aren't very big or aren't very important to me, but I think we all have stuff that we would love to do that we don't do, whether it's just because I'm in this pattern and in this rut, like the sleepwalking I was talking about earlier, and you need inertia to get out of that sleepwalk. You need drive to get out of that sleepwalk.
Yeah, thank you. Kathleen, back to you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was me. I'm sorry.
That was good.
No, that was a good answer. No, how can someone connect deeply with their truest self when the mind, as we just talked about, the mind so often works to sabotage the path that your intuition wants to take?
Absolutely. This is such a good question. So you have a left brain and a right brain. And that isn't to mean that it's strictly left and right brain. That's just the definitions we give to it. And we know that it's not strictly left and right brain because people who've had traumatic brain injuries or who have cancer, the stuff that the left brain does flips over to the right brain, and the stuff that the right brain does flips over to the left brain. So we know that it's not a strict line between the two hemispheres, right? There's definitely hopping that happens. So as I say this, please know that the definition of left and right is just for polarity purposes. It's not the actual location in the brain. Okay. So left brain thinking is your logical, your science, your math based, like it's all the things that are your left brain, right? Your left brain is all the things that are logic based and things you can see and the reality in front of you. Right brain is your intuition, it's your artistic heart, it's the listening to your gut, it's the information that comes in from other sources. Like when you turn on the car radio and you've been asking the universe a really big question, and you turn on the car radio and the song on the radio, just like that lyric is like, oh my gosh, that's the answer to the question, right? That's your right brain that's able to take that in. Because your left brain will be like, what kind of moron are you? Like, you turn on your radio and you think you get an answer. What, you think you just get an answer like that? Like, that's the scientific, logical ego. We're like, sense, we're going to keep you safe. And the right brain's like, how do I imagine the world? The way you get more into your right brain thinking of how do I imagine the world and how can I see this from another angle? The best way for me is meditation. When I want to tap into what does my true self say about this, I get out of all of that. And I hop into meditation and I find myself into that space that Esther Hicks calls vortex. Chris Duncan calls it the field. I think Joe Dispenza also calls it the field, but it's the space where there's no space, where you are not a body and you're not a being. You're there. Everything is happening below you while you are in this other space. And when you are in that space, you know your true heart. And you know your true desires, and you know who you truly are. And that is how I think the right brain pulls down what happens up in that space and makes that something that the left brain can go, oh, I see that now. I recognize that now.
I think some people may also refer to it as the zero point. It's someone
Oh,
once
yeah.
described this to me, or I once read it rather, where if you're just sitting quietly and your brain is constantly going from thought to thought to thought, it's the space between those thoughts, even though it may be a minuscule amount of time, not even seconds. It's just, you're thinking one thing, but it's that space between thoughts, and that is where you want to be in meditation, is to prolong the space between your thoughts. And
Yes.
that's where answers or your,
Answers come. Yeah. When I first started in meditation, before I got to be really good at it, and I was like, oh, this is what I'm actually doing. And I had no idea what I was doing. I found it really helpful because I am an anxious person. I found it really helpful to like imagine the stream. Like they give you this, and you're like, imagine a stream, and then imagine there are leaves on the stream that are going downstream. And then if you have a thought that pops up, plop it on the leaf and then allow that thought to go down the stream. And then eventually another thought will come and plop it on the leaf and let it go downstream. And then we've all seen this happen. There's like spots on the stream where the leaf just gets stuck and it doesn't move. And I have found that some thoughts I put on the stream, I put on a leaf, and they just like floated right down. And then I found that when I put another thought on the leaf stopped moving. And I was like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, nothing's wrong with the leaf. There's nothing really wrong with the thought. It's just that the thought is not something that moves away so quickly. And my body, my brain knows that and puts it on a leaf, and the leaf stops moving. It either, flops over to the side of the bank and it just hangs out over there for a while. But it lets me know that's a thought that's a problem in the sense that it's not moving out as quickly and it's causing some emotional dysregulation for me. And so as I allow the stream to continue rolling, eventually that leaf will dislodge and I'll go back for it. I'll be like, where was that leaf that didn't move? And I'll go back for it and the leaf will have moved on its own in my meditation because I was able to unhook whatever was emotionally hooked to that thought as I was picturing this like stream going down.
Interesting.
Wow, that's a really good explanation because I have struggled with meditation from exactly that. Thoughts just get rid of one. I tried mantras, tried all breathing, all sorts, and it doesn't take long and the thoughts are crowding back. So I must try putting them on leaves. Or,
Just put them
yeah,
on
that's a.
you. Well, the thing is, you're going to. You are a human being with a very beautiful brain. You're going to have thoughts that come in. And people tell me all the time, I can't meditate because my thoughts get in the way. And I was like, that's what they're supposed to do. If you were dead, you wouldn't have that problem.
That's
But you
right.
are alive. And so you have that problem.
That's a good one. Good one. Here's one for you. In your work, do you see a difference in things that are holding men back as opposed to things that are holding women back, or was there a lot of similarities?
That's a really interesting question because if you had asked me this question 4 months ago, I would probably give you a very different answer.
No.
But I've never really, I'm just going to throw this out there. I've never really paid a lot of attention to Taylor Swift. Like I really haven't. She's not somebody that was even on my radar. But through a series of events that like happened publicly, like and privately, I invited a I threw I'll just I invited a bunch of that edge between exciting and scared. I threw a party where I invited all of these people that are in the Philadelphia area, and I sent out paper invitations to them. And most of the people who I invited did not come. And it wasn't like little people. It was like Jason Kelsey, right? And it was Patti LaBelle because she lives in the area. And it was, and then I were like, well, Taylor Swift. And when I decided to invite and send an invite to Taylor Swift, I laughed my head off. I was like, that's the funniest thing ever. And I mailed her one. And somebody's like, well, if you're mailing one to Jason Kelsey, you have to mail one to Travis Kelsey too. So I mailed one to Travis Kelsey because I didn't know they were dating at the time. I sent the invitations. I sent one to the editor of the Philadelphia Magazine, and he actually never got it. It got returned to me. I sent one to Bradley Cooper. I sent one to like all of these people, right? That was my edgy between the two. I started noticing Taylor Swift after that, and I started listening to a bunch of her interviews, and I started watching the way the way people were responding to her being present at a football game, and the way that people don't give two figs about a different person just as famous at a football game or a basketball game. Like, who's paying attention to how much time Jack Nicholson gets when he sits on a sideline at a basketball game? How much airtime does he get? Has anybody measured that in minutes? Because they have for Taylor, right? And so I am beginning to realize just how much a successful female is challenging to society. I had no idea until I noticed the Taylor Swift effect, basically, where if she shows up, people who are not as successful as her have something to say about it. And that really, what does it even matter? And so I didn't, it wasn't even on my radar until this party and all of these things. And people were like, "You invited Travis and Taylor. Did you know?" And I was like, "No, I had no idea. What are you talking about?" And then I started listening to the rhetoric. And is it different for men and women? I would say absolutely. Because the standard that, and it's also like the Barbie movie kind of fed into this a little bit, where there's that big speech about how you can't be too much, but you can't be not enough, right? You can't, and there's that whole line of like, what does it really mean to be female? And I noticed the commentary that came out on that too, about men saying it was the dumbest movie they've ever seen. And I'm like, but no, because it's actually playing out how impossible it is for females to move up and be seen and be respected. Whereas for men, there's already the I'm here, I'm showing up, you see me, that it's fine. And
Very interesting.
so you have to give us tell us what happened with this party. Did you
Okay,
actually have this
so like
party?
two people that I were invited showed up, and then I just started walking around inviting everybody I met. For a while there, I just like, if I knew you and I bumped into you and I got like literally belly to belly with you, right? I was in your face. I was like, I'm throwing a party. Nobody's coming. You have to come. So I had about 25, 30 people there.
Good.
Yeah,
Good party.
it was great. It was a lot of fun. I'm really glad I threw it. I will rethink how I do it in the future.
Did Bradley Cooper show
He didn't get the invitation
up?
I think I mailed it to like the wrong address. Now,
Oh,
I will
dear.
say I invited James McAvoy, and I don't know if he got the invitation. I sent it over the pond because apparently when he was here filming Split, he met somebody on cast or something and he married her. And so he has a Philadelphia connection. And I was like, let's invite that guy.
Well done.
So how does manifesting through meditation actually work? Are we talking about law of attraction here?
Yeah, we are.
Okay.
We are. So I in 2019, I went to a Reikiist and she was like, here's this book, and it is the single book that actually helped me figure out how to like live the life I want. And it was The Law of Attraction by Esther and Jerry Hicks.
Oh, yes, of course.
And
Yeah.
then I read the Ask and It Is Given. And there's a whole bunch of practices in Ask and It Is Given, right? And I started doing those. I pulled out a checkbook, an old checkbook, and I started writing checks to myself. And then I was like, why am I even waiting for the $1,000 to show up in the bank account every day? I'm like, if the money is there, the money's there. Just start writing checks, Kim. So I started writing checks for all these things. I paid off my student loans. I did all of these things, but one of the big things she said is get yourself into the vortex or that in between, what did you call it? The zero space?
The 0 point.
The 0 point, get yourself into the 0 point or get yourself into the vortex. And she said for 5 minutes. If you can make that last for 5 minutes and you're able to live in that for 5 minutes, then you can change your life basically. You can change your circumstances. You can change your vibration enough to match the vibration you need to be in order to let these things in. And so I was like, okay, but I would sit in meditation and I'd be like, not happening. Like my brain is too busy. Like as you were talking about Peter, right? You were like, my brain just never shut up. My brain never shut up. So I was like, this just isn't working for me. So I started really honing in on what meditation was, and it took about an hour. It was like if I meditated for an hour, maybe the last 15 minutes I can get myself into the vortex. But it took me the 45 minutes of like dropping all of the stuff that is Kim Beam in order to get to those 15 minutes of golden nugget time. And so meditating, and I found that when I got there, I was in a space where I could start like letting go of the stuff that holds me back. And a way of like letting go of the things. And so one of the things I talk about in manifesting through meditation is through this practice, I manifested $1 million. And I will also say through this practice, I manifested $100,000 because I got my student loans forgiven.
Wow.
I was told that by the government in like December of 20, gosh, 22, December of 2022, they told me I would not have my student loans forgiven, that I filled out the documentation and it wasn't in the time period, and they gave me a bunch of reasons, all of which were not a part of what Biden had been doing at the time, but these were legitimate reasons that were true before the Biden like switch and revamp that he put in place for a very small window of time. And I was like, okay, so I'm not getting forgiven this way. And instead of like getting angry and being resisty and like doing all of the things that like put up walls, I was like, okay, so if this is the letter you sent me that says I'm not getting forgiven, I'm shredding this because this isn't reality. I don't know how it's going to happen, but it's not going to happen that way, and that's fine. I'll find another way for it to be forgiven, even if that means I pay it off myself, because in that way it's forgiven, right? Like how I don't need the definition of how it's going to happen for it to happen. I'm just going to let it go. A month later, I come home from work and there are two checks in my mailbox from the IRS. You know those IRS checks when you get your payment back? We used to get them all the time, every time, but now the direct deposit,
We're
they're
in
like
Canada.
yellowy.
We're in
Yeah.
Canada,
Oh
so
yeah, you're in
IRS.
Canada. So they're like yellowy with this very specific font. And when you look at it, you're like, oh, that's your like IRS repayment check from like, when you've paid too many taxes. But that gets directly deposited to me. And it was January. There is no like return on your taxes at that point. And I was like, what is that about? So I brought them in the checks into the house and they were for a total of $7,000. And I was like, oh, I was like, there's two of them and the total is $7,000. And I was like, well, that's really interesting. And then I ran out because I was running late. I ran out to dinner, came home from dinner, sat down at my computer, logged in, and was like, and yes, I had my student loans forgiven. They were poof, taken care of. And I
Nice.
was like, oh, okay. Like, even though the IRS said it wasn't going to happen, it totally happened. And so it's just a matter of like not believing reality with your eyes.
Right.
Wow, that's amazing. Quite
Yeah.
amazing. So you talk about automatic writing.
I do talk about automatic
To
writing.
tell our audience what it is and what the benefits of it are.
I will tell you that it is one of the most encouraging practices I have. If I am feeling mopey, sad, hopeless, helpless, and my brain, that moment where your brain just decides to beat you up and make you feel really crappy? Automatic writing is the thing that gets me out of that. So automatic writing is basically sitting down, and I started with a pen and paper, and then my handwriting turned to crud. And then I was like, what am I going to do with all these binders of paper? I now have two binders, like 2 inches binders filled with paper that I'm just like, this is too much. So I've switched to typing it out. But it's basically getting into a space where you are asking your highest self, the self we were talking about earlier, right? The one about left brain, right brain, none of it, getting into the vortex and just finding out what's true up there. Now, it all depends on like where you come from a spiritual sort of perspective. Like, is it the universe you talk to? Is it guides that you talk to? Is it God that you talk to? Is it like angels that you talk to? Although I'll get into that in a second. Or your highest self, right? Your best, most perfect version, your Yui, as Heather Alice Shea likes to say, your Yui-est you there is. And then you ask that Yui-est you, the most soul version, the most like perfect version, not the tainted human version, but the most perfect soul version of you. What do I need to know today? Or how am I loved? And then you get the answer. And if it starts to be mean or it starts to be unencouraging, you've tapped into the wrong source. Like, get out of that. That's not the source you want. But what you find is it's like you're braver than you think you are. You're stronger than you think you are. You have untapped potential inside of you. The fears that you have, like, and as you're writing, these are the things that it says to you. It's like the fears that you have are unfounded, and if you pressed a little harder, you will find that they are crumbly walls. And so you ask the question of what do I need to know today, or what does it mean to love? Or I asked on Leap Day, I did a post on Instagram on Leap Day, like, now that we're given this extra day this year, what do we do with it? And it's all very interesting things of like, how are you going to connect with somebody else? And how are you going to connect with yourself? And
So
so it's an, go ahead. Yeah.
you ask these questions and then you just sit quietly and whatever comes to mind is what you
What,
write down on the paper. Is
sort
that
of like when I get an intuitive hit, if I don't open my mouth, nothing is going to come out, right? If I don't start saying words, then words don't show up. I'll just like be stuck. So if you just sit there and wait for your hand to get it, it won't work. You have to start writing. And you might write, I don't know what to write. I don't know what to write. I don't have an answer to this. I don't have an answer to this. I don't know what to say to this. And then all of a sudden you might be like, maybe this is about hope. Maybe it's about letting things go. But I don't know what to write about this. I don't know what to write about this. And then you like look back and you're like, oh, here's a little nugget of something that's actually true. This the answer here is hope. And I, you know, there's something bigger going on. And then the more you do that, I don't know what to write. I don't know what to write. I don't know what to write. I feel silly doing this. Don't feel silly. There's more here than you see. But you don't necessarily pick up on that little bit until you go back and reread it. And you see that you had dropped in this random phrase that you didn't know was in there. Because you're so busy focused on, I don't know what to write. 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 Your pen will write something else that's different.
Interesting.
Okay.
So tell us about your intuition coaching course.
It's so I think for, well, here are some facts. We all have intuition. It exists for all of us. We all have a gut sense of knowing. Something that may not be factual, but I'm pretty sure is true, and that is most of us doubt our gut. Most of us don't believe it. And most of us have a really hard time saying, I'm going to follow my intuition as it leads me off a bridge. Right? I mean, you don't know what's going to happen when you jump off the, like, you know what I mean? Like, it feels like you're going to die, right? And so you're just like, I'm not doing that. And so the intuition course is recognizing there are doubt and there is fear and there is blockage from hearing yourself because there's so much programming about the left brain logical, rational, right? And the turning on the car and hearing the thing you need to hear when you need to hear it is so not the norm that people are like, that's a fluke and coincidence. But the trusting your intuition or the coaching with me to trust your intuition is basically saying the radio moment is not the coincidence, that's the norm. If we only know how to look for it and know how to trust it. And the more you trust it, the more you'll see it.
I like that.
And so how do you get out of the left brain logic and allow your right brain to be just as powerful and strong?
Right. Very insightful.
Thanks. Yeah,
Very
so
good.
it's
Very
yeah,
good.
and there's a lot of training that goes in. Like, there's the scientific side, right? There's scientific evidence on the left brain side to
Right.
show that everybody is surrounded by a 3-foot bubble that is your intuition. It comes
Right.
in first through your heart, up to your head, and then down to your gut, and that takes 3 seconds.
Right.
Now, on the other side, I'm sorry, on the other side of that, right, I would say science has only proven it to be 3 feet, but I can almost prove it to you, almost prove it to you, that it's much bigger than 3 feet because all of us have heard stories about a spouse, a mom, or a twin who knew something happened to a family member
Yes.
on the other side of the world and didn't know what it was, but knew something drastic had happened.
Right. Absolutely. So,
And yeah.
yeah, go ahead, finish your
No, no,
thoughts.
no. Yeah, that's just it. Yes.
Well, we are running short on time there, Peter. Yeah, I know, but you have a burning question that you want to ask Kim, so go for it.
I do have a question I want to ask him. So, and the
Yes.
question we ask all our guests, and that is, from your area of expertise, what's one tip or idea or suggestion you would make to every member of our audience to start improving their life and realizing their potential today? What's one thing today they can start doing?
So you know how you get nudged to do something, and then your left brain says, "No, don't do it. That's dumb." Because, and I have to tell you, I have that problem all the time. I'm like, I knew I should have done that thing, but you don't do it because your left brain says, "No, don't." So like, you might be driving home from work, and your brain says something in your gut says, "Make a right here," but you never make a right here. And you're like, "Why would I make a right here?" Right? Your intuition works a lot like a tissue box. You have a tissue, and if you never pull the tissue out, you'll never use the tissue underneath. And you'll never know why, you know? So if I don't make that right-hand turn, if I'm going home from work and the intuition says make a right here, and I don't make the right-hand turn, why would it keep talking to me? Because I'm not paying any attention to it. But like a tissue box, if I make a right-hand turn and pull the tissue out of the tissue box, another tissue is going to come up. And I mean, obviously if it's not an empty box, but you know, it's a full box in this analogy. And so if I make my right hand turn, I'm going to get another, I'm going to get something else. There's something else will pop up. Now, maybe I've made a right hand turn and now I'm on a street and I have no idea why I'm there and I'm not getting anything else and I feel really dumb. Fine. But maybe later on today, you might be in your kitchen or you might be on your way home. Again, you get yourself back on the right space and it's like, I need you to go to the grocery store. Listen to me for the run to the grocery store, and you hear, go buy spaghetti sauce. And you're like, I don't need spaghetti sauce. I'm like, go buy spaghetti sauce. So you go in and you buy spaghetti sauce, and you're like, this is dumb. I don't need spaghetti sauce. And so then you get home and you find like four people at your door, right? That you weren't expecting who are like, we came over. You're like, I need bought some, right? You're opening yourself up to the possibility to make things a little easier for yourself if you listen ahead of time. And so that's what I would say. If you want to learn, start noticing the nudges when you get them and give them space. Give them a little breathing room. Don't knock them out immediately. Don't let your left brain come in. Or I would say encourage you. I would encourage you. I don't want to use the word don't because that sounds really judgy. But like I encourage you to like give them a little breathing room just to be like, what are you? What is this idea that I'm having that my left brain wants to pounce all over and say, no. What is it that I need to give a little life here? And what happens if I do that? Am I willing to? Am I willing to look a little bit of a fool so that I can learn what my intuition really is?
Okay,
Fantastic.
good
Oh my
one.
goodness. Well, I mean, we could talk to you for hours, I
Oh,
think,
for sure.
about
We could
that.
indeed.
I'm really, but unfortunately, we're out of time. But how can people contact you?
Yes, I am at Instagram. I am Kim Beam. That's me. I am Kim Beam. And then info at kimbeam.com is my email address.
Okay.
And then Kim Beam, KIMBEAM is dot com is my website.
Okay.
And so Kim, how do I want to phrase this? I make this joke that I mean, I don't really drink alcohol at all. Like, I don't. But my mom named me Kim Beam. And I'm like, Mom, what were you thinking? Like, Kim Beam and Jim Beam, like, they are so close together. What are you thinking? And she goes, I thought everybody would just call you Kimberly. I'm like, no. So I just like, I'm Kim Beam, but I'm like Jim Beam, but I'm not. So like, it just makes it easier to put those two things together in people's heads. Kimbeam.com.
Okay, got it,
Fantastic.
got it, got it.
Oh.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Kim. That was
Yes.
great. And
Thank you
thanks
for
to our
having me
audience.
so much.
And back to Kathleen to round it off.
All right. Thank you so much, Kim. Hopefully, we'll see you again sometime in the future back on our show because it was a delight having you on today.
So great. Thank you.
And thank you all so very much for tuning in once again. If anyone is interested in being a guest on our show, we invite you to visit us at theyakkingshow.com. All you need to do is click on the Contacts tab where you will find a short application form, and we would love to hear from you. So until next time, take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.